Blog Talk Radio.
You brought too many.
afternoon. Show number 909. Welcome as we get ready to sit down for an abbreviated version of the stir fry with your loving mad scientists and the chefs here only on Soul Tree Radio in a Raw. Welcome again, Soul Tree Radio in a Raw in effect. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to have you. Soul Tree Radio is proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to Chefs, the Soldiers of the Brother Man Network, Radio Reggie, languishing down in Richmond, Virginia, Ricky Hampton Sr. in Detroit, Michigan, and Pat Freeman, the Mighty Obot, doing this thing on 1080 AM, WUFO, and 96.5 Power FM, the number one sports show in the nation. I must add also that Brother Hampton is on Tuesdays, 10 p.m., with the African American Athlete Show. Great stuff. Please check him out. And as always, riding shotgun with me, the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. What up, G?
Raiders! No, okay. this is what I want to say, folks. The Oakland A's are doing it right. The Raiders got it all wrong.
Uh-oh.
What I mean by this is this. The Oakland A's are homegrown. Homegrown. What does that mean? That means they tried everything possible to stay in Oakland, California.
Okay.
Raiders did exactly the opposite. The first deal they got, they went to Los Angeles. Again, they're doing it again. Las Vegas. So, if you're an Oakland Raider fan, turn in your black and silver. If you're a Raider fan, turn in your pride and boys. Because there is none with the Oakland Raiders. I'm sorry.
I think you're right, my brother. As a matter of fact, that pride and poise that you're talking about, it sounds more like lies and noise, because that's all
you've gotten.
Well, you know, isn't it all you've gotten from Gruden thus far? You know, we've been down this road a couple of times, but that's ultimately what it is. He is operating with impunity, and he is helping no one, especially Raider fans, with some of the actions that he's, as our brother Tony McLean comes into the mix, it has to be said. The Oakland A's, for better or for worse, are really the only team that's holding up the city of Oakland. They have built from within to a degree. They've made good free agent purchases for the most part. And once they started talking, or rather stopped talking that money ball nonsense and tried to build a team, it looks like they've quietly done it. I mean, Tony, do you concur? I mean, does it look like Oakland's baseball future is strong?
You know what? I'll believe it after this week, because we are really meeting to start tomorrow. And
okay.
There's a lot of, you know, and see what's funny is, and I know Gary probably knows this a little bit more than us. They have now come up with another prototype for a new park. Now, the thing I was trying to figure out, Gary, is it within Oakland or is this San Diego? Is this San Jose all over again without Dionne Warwick? Is Gary there?
It's Oakland.
It's Oakland.
It's
Oakland.
So okay, the general area, it is Oakland. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, because they had a press conference about a week or so ago, and they showed
mm-hmm.
the prototype of their new state. I think this is going to be it. For now, it would be baseball only. Now, I'm sure they would have other things. Because, see, let's put it this way. Right now, the one thing that the A's have but they haven't had over the years is they have the city of Oakland's entire attention right now.
Yes.
That's a great point.
And see, the thing is, look, the Raiders are lame ducking it for another year or so.
Mm-hmm.
The Warriors' new building, I believe, opens up at the beginning of the 1920 season. So,
mm-hmm.
how many more years left for the Coliseum, Gary? Two? Three?
The lead is in 2025. This stadium is ready to fall apart. It's ready to fall apart because you have the foundation that is cracking, and you can't stay there any longer.
And also, you know, another thing, Mike, that I think people are forgetting about. Now, we all remember the damage that happened to Candlestick during the 89 World Series. You know,
yeah.
But people forget.
Mm-hmm.
People forget. Remember that earthquake. If I remember correctly, what was it? A 6 or 7 on the Richter scale?
It was a big one.
7.1. So we got to figure that the Coliseum had to have some structural damage as well. Now, thankfully, nothing's happened, at least that we've known of over the years. But you've got to figure that they had to deal with some sort of internal damage.
In the West Bay and the East Bay are totally different. It's built on sand rock.
Okay.
East Bay is solid rock. So if an earthquake hits in the West Bay, the whole West Bay is a rock. Where in the East Bay, you don't feel anything.
That's interesting.
But,
that's like the South Bronx and Yankee Stadium. Yankee Stadium. And most of the Bronx is built on bedrock. So, obviously, one of the poorer areas in the city proper is one of the sturdiest. So, I was just throwing that into a pot. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just curious, Gary. Even with that, and given the age of that part, don't you still think that there may have been, like, you know, little reverberations? I mean, again, not enough to so that you know it would come tumbling down. But just normal wear and tear, and the fact that you've had
it's just too old. It was built 1967. It's 2018 now.
They just celebrated. You know, this past season was their 50th anniversary in Oakland. So, you know, it's just because if you remember correctly, that was built for the Raiders because
that's right.
The old, I guess it was called Frank Yule Field.
Frank Yule Field.
Apparently, they were one potato chip away from just crumbling at some point. And see, this was right at the height of the NFL AFL merger, so
right.
they had to make sure that the Raiders, don't forget, Al Davis was the commissioner of the AFL at the time, so they had to make sure that the Raiders were were going to be the first.
This is the thing about the Raiders. You have ownership, Al Davis. But the more I research this, the more angry I get. Al
yeah.
wanted to do and he couldn't do it. What he wanted to do, he wanted to be in San Francisco. That's what he wanted. And he couldn't get it because he could not do it because the Niners were there.
That's
how it all started.
Yeah. And but see, just to piggyback on the whole A's thing, now this year we saw them go for it a little bit. You know, they went and got Amelia, they went and got Fernando Rooney, and you know, they added a few little things. But so far, and maybe I'm wrong, guys, so far their silence has been deafening during the off season. Now the winter meetings start tomorrow, and you know, you're already hearing rumblings about, you know, will they give Jed Lowry a big deal? Chris Davis's contract comes up, I think, in another year or two. Are they going to pull a Marlins and try to get this stadium, and then they'll give them an excuse to sort of go back to their Moneyball ways, or will they try to compete? To see, you know, I still believe, and I think you believe the same thing, Gary. They've been trying to go for me so long now.
You're breaking up a little bit, Tony.
Okay, is that better? Is this better?
That's better. Yep.
Oh, okay, sorry, I was just moving around a little bit. But they've been trying, look this way, Chicken Little ain't got nothing on the A's at this point in time.
Boy, you're right about that shit.
Because it just, I mean, even the Marlins in their Keith Sweat days weren't as bad as the A's are. See, I think the A's can compete. I think it's just the difference in not being able to compete and not wanting to compete.
Yeah, I agree, but it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting being an A's fan because you seem like you got a brand new template to work with, because you do have a star, maybe two stars, and a whole team in which to build on top of those couple stars, Davis and whoever the other person is. And because of that, yeah, there may be some investment in being a fan in the area. Gentlemen, I want to deviate slightly because an incident happened earlier this week involving one of our own. Rhonda Harper is in the house, the queen of extreme. Queen, are you there?
I am here. I'm sick, but I'm here.
Well, we're sorry to hear about that. But the queen is here on urgent business because there was a regional incident that has blown up nationally. And Rhonda, for everybody's clarification, you'll have to explain some of the terminology involved in the incident. So would you please run it down?
Okay. This is as fast as I can. So the leash on a surfboard attaches to your body and also attaches to your board, and that keeps you safe. If that board flies up under you, you know, you can hit somebody and kill somebody with your board. It is also a safety mechanism if you're about to drown. You hold on to the leash, it'll get you to the flotation device, which is your surfboard.
Right.
So we're out filming for NBC because they're doing a segment on Hadju, who's here from Senegal, who's going to the Olympics. Well, the perpetrator, asked our camera crew who they were filming, and he told them that he was filming the two girls that were in the water, which happened to be my girl. The guy goes down, goes back into the water, and targets my girl, grabs the leash as she's going on the wave. He chases her down on the wave. I'm on the pier. I'm a coach and a trainer. Everybody knows I'm ISA certified, ready to go to the Olympics. I'm taking pictures of sickly body parts. And Danielle is a longboarder, so her whole competition level is about the foot movement on the board. So I'm targeting the board at the time. So as she's coming out of the way, the guy's chasing her. I'm shooting, and he's pulling, looking for her leash. He grabs her leash and pulls her board from underneath her. Yeah, while she's surfing, and she almost hits the pier. If she hadn't backed off, if she hadn't been an experienced surfer, she could have easily hit the pier. Now, what is that reminiscent of? It's reminiscent of Nick Gobbledon hitting the pier in 1951 and dying and killing off black surfing as he should have been at the time. It was so significant of a moment that it was captured not only by NBC crew, because they were filming, so there was no way you could deny it, but it hit national news. I've been getting calls from Australia, I mean, just Ireland, everywhere. It's such a violation in the water, and it just happened to be. It's like they caught the right guy messing with the wrong crew, because everybody knew that I was going to do something afterwards. Like, I'm not going to let that happen to us in the water. And, the big thing now is, was it racist? Was it sexist? Was it localism? Well, it could be a trifecta. We don't know what was in that guy's mind that day. The three elements are always key when something like this happens. So you have to first question, as a black female, was it us being black women in the water with camera crews on us and this guy feeling insignificant, or is it the fact that we're women and there's camera crews on us and, you know, he's feeling insignificant, or are you just a jerk and you think this is your local area and you don't want anybody here other than you guys? Those are all three elements that go into play.
That sounds like all of the above 200, Alex.
Yep. No shit. The first thing I'm thinking about this is when we first started talking with our sister here, she had mentioned about the Inkwell Beach area, the significance of it, and that it needed a plaque because it represented an area where black folks were free to surf, but it was a narrow area, and obviously it was ghettoizing the beach. But the whole point was it was where things started, and Gobbledon was a legend. As this thing grew, and we should also say that Rhonda is the CEO of Black Girl Surf, which is one of the prime factors behind the young surfers who are aiming to get to the Olympics. As this thing morphed on, Rhonda drew the ire of surfer intelligentsia from around the world, mostly South Africa and Australia, because she wanted to have her own function doing this for black women and for black folks, period. She has surfers from other parts, the Caribbean and as well as Africa, and the goal is to obviously pump the progression of surfing for blacks and the acceptance of black surfing. And clearly the people knew who you were and what you were doing there. So the next question, Rhonda, is what the fuck happened to the son of a bitch who did this in the first place?
Well, you know, you always see those things that happen, like Barbecue Becky or something, and you end up shutting them down. He is officially shut down. Social media got a hold of it. The news got a hold of it. Nobody's seen him in days. We're going to have his permits pulled. I talked to the lifeguard captains down there. There's nothing that they could do about it because it's a county and a city. You know, it's a bureaucratic thing. He's got a license in Los Angeles, the city of Los Angeles, and they're, you know, they work for the county, so it's kind of like their hands are tied. There's nothing they can do.
Okay.
But I can, as a citizen, have him shut down. And so far, his websites are down. His IG page has been shut down. Somebody took his name and put up the picture of him pulling the leash now. I mean, it just became so viral that, he's out of business.
What's this boomerang's name?
His name is Wagner Lima. He's from he's from Topanga, but his company's called Brazilian Surf Club.
So he's basically in the loop, so to speak.
Yeah. So that's the worst part about this. The worst part about it is, yes, she didn't get in, and that's fine, but he's a surf instructor. His whole licensing, his whole accreditation is behind keeping other surfers safe and teaching people how to be safe in the water. So what he did was not even just a violation of a law, which is a battery, a 242 battery, But mm-hmm. it's a violation of the surfer instructor's code. No surfer instructor should have clients if you're going to behave like that in the water. None.
No kidding. Rhonda, you were mentioning the footwork on Sister Gal's boards. I take it footwork has a lot to do with the technical scoring. We got Pat Freeman in the mix as well.
It is.
Okay.
It is. It's the walk across the floor. You know how you go, hanging 10 where you put your 10 toes on the tip of your board. All of those are maneuvers. So when you're shooting a longboarder, you have to shoot their feet because that's what it's all about, style.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Since this was done, and since it did go viral and went through mainstream media and other places now, where are people seeing black girls surf, and how much exposure, for better or worse, have you gotten from the incident?
Okay, so from the surf industry and the people that know, that can visually see the wrong done here, I've had so much support. But the guys that act like Wagner in the water have sent their, drones in after us, so much so that we had to cut down the comments. And now we're starting to ban people. Now we're getting the threat. Mm-hmm. I remember the BSA talking about running around. It's so funny that when this happened, one of the BSA guys put up Tony Corey's letter from 1973. Mm-hmm. And I thought, here you are trying to make Tony relevant. But the point is that it's 2018, and it's still happening in the water. So even though they did put that thing up to try to, be relevant again, I had to take it like, look at this. This is still going on in the water years later. And to women,
surfing
that,
while
it's
black.
Not just me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a motherfucking shame. The one time you wish Jaws would be around to eat up some asshole, they're somewhere else. But I digress. The most important issue in this, obviously, though, is that the girls are safe, and this is nothing or has done nothing to besmirch your goals or the reputation therein.
Oh, no. It just elevates. It puts me in a position where I can get things done that I haven't had an opportunity to get done before.
Mm-hmm.
USC has asked me to come speak. But San Diego State University yesterday wants us to put together a panel. I mean, it's given us the opportunity to be out there and to be more vocal and show people that we are here. We don't have a Serena.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a Tiger. This is it. Like, we have to present ourselves and be this next generation's role model. And if we don't start sticking up for this stuff now, the next generation is not going to get a chance. So this is our window. Everybody talking about 15 minutes of fame. Let us use it and be productive in it and not, start backbiting each other and doing, all these other crazy things that I see. So I'm going to go forward with this message. It's a universal message, and I got to get my girl to the Olympics in 2020, and that's the goal.
Mm-hmm. One last question before we go further with this. I just wanted to establish that the act of messing with somebody's leash is akin to cutting someone's brake line in a car. Obviously, it will cause an accident or cause problems regardless of whoever is on that board. Is that a correct statement?
The code is a 242. We got that one. I wanted to make sure I was very clear when I start charging people with some type of, legal charge. And it is. It's a battery charge.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well,
and that was
I am hoping.
By a policeman.
Well, I'm glad that the ladies are all right. And I know you're under the weather and all that, but
Thank you.
Appreciate you following through on this.
Thank you. We will
follow through on BASN Newsroom, as we always do, because, the Shark's kitchen always open. And, we're not nothing more than a bunch of limp dick Ross on a bed of rice here. So you be strong. Love to the ladies there. Keep grinding.
Love
we got
you
back. All right,
Love
sis.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. We got Pat Freeman, the mighty Obot, on the line as well. Obot, can you hear us?
What's up, Mike? What's up, Pete? What's happening?
What's up?
Obot.
What's up?
How are you? How are you, sir?
I'm doing good.
What about May?
How y'all doing?
We are glad to hear that, my brother. May your tribe increase. What is the latest for us from Bill's land?
Well, they're looking at the stadium again, which it never went away, but now the owners said they've started a 6 to 9 month study of what would be the best way to proceed looking at a new facility, not only for the football team, but they found out that the hockey team's arena is obsolete also. And so now the city and the county and the state here, they need three different facilities. If they would have listened to us, they would have had two out of three completed 2012-2014. Now they need a new convention center. The KeyBank Arena for the hockey team needs to be updated or an extensive renovation, and they need a new football facility. So now they need three areas, which should cost you up to $2.5 to $3 billion.
Wow. Well, it's not a surprise timing wise that the Buffalo Sabres are actually playing well right now. So is this something that was initiated by that, or is this just something that was from the grave being unearthed and brought back to life?
Well, I'll put it to you, the county owns the hockey arena and the football arena. They have not been doing the upgrades necessary to keep your arena competitive. The owners have been putting forth a lot of money to keep the arenas competitive, both the football facility and the hockey facility.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know if it's coincident or not, but it is what it is. It's here in front of your face. The convention center has been obsolete for years. But, you know, of course, our private plan included a privately funded convention center in which the current county executive never got behind us. So
true. True.
He's
up still in office, by the way.
Yeah, he's up for re-election this year, and I'm sure his opponent will make this a campaign issue.
Meanwhile, back at the Bill. I'm sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
He's basically, he kicked the can down the road, and now you need three facilities. And they've got your back up against the wall because, you know, the Buffalo Bills have an opt-out in 2020. For $28 million, they can opt out of the current lease agreement and become the NFL's first, free agent franchise.
Wow.
They could bid any city, municipality, will be able to bid on the Buffalo Bills as of December of 2020 if they opt out. Now, get this. The opt-out is the equivalent of the tax subsidy.
Okay.
So the opt-out is $28 million. The tax subsidy is $28 million. So you can opt out of this lease agreement for nothing.
Wow.
And become the NFL's first free agent franchise.
Holy
shit. Only a crackhead would think that a business person is not going to at least be opportunity. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just out of, even if you're not going anywhere, wouldn't you want to hear the numbers? I mean, come on.
That's deep.
Pat, is there any truth to the rumor that Tyrone Diggums is one of the
He's going to be the chief negotiator.
Oh,
hey,
shit.
I got you got these not going anywhere. Shut up. You don't know.
No shit.
You don't have to be crackhead to hear the numbers.
Wow.
Would you like to hear what San Antonio, London, and all these other, what can you do for me? I mean, all these guys are agents. The money is going through the roof. When have you ever heard of a franchise becoming a free agent?
That's true. Can you imagine what the line, and you know, being what we are as gambling beasts in this country, you know they would set up a line on that. Who would be the heavy favorite? Would it be Toronto? Would it be San Antonio? Because San Antonio was a bridesmaid, but never a bride, because they dangled him in front of that when Benson had fucked up with Katrina down there in New Orleans. So who would be the favorite for the franchise?
There's many. I mean, you've got Birmingham that was one of the few successful USFL franchises. Mm-hmm. They have an XFL franchise starting in 2020.
That's true.
There's a lot of cities. How about Oakland? Now Oakland has moved to Vegas. Well, they haven't moved yet, but they're moving to Vegas.
Yep.
And but Gary, you know the land has now opened up because the A's have finally understood the move to the Howard, waterfront terminal, Terminal B.
Yes.
And that's 50 acres, so that now that whole land area has opened up for redevelopment, what we were talking about a few years ago out in Oakland. And I think Oakland could make a bid. San Diego could make a bid. I mean, think about it. How many opportunities does an NFL franchise get to be a free agent?
Well, you know,
and how many times... And how many times does the city get to screw itself, just like Buffalo seems to be doing right now?
Hey, man, this county executive is one of the most hard-headed individuals I've ever met in my life. I met with him. He wouldn't listen. I was at a town hall meeting. He wouldn't listen. And now he doesn't want to look me in the face because I'm going to just laugh. I'm like, dude, I told you this in 2012.
What's this guy's name? Polecat or Polecats or Garbage Cans? What is his name?
Pulling Carts.
Pulling Carts. There we go.
Pulling Carts. Yeah. What he did, he kicked the can down the road. He kept kicking the can down the road. Mm-hmm. Now his back is up against the wall.
Sounds like the can's going to kick back.
Governor Cuomo is just as much a fault. He went along with renovating that stadium too. Without doing the research, without listening to many of us that told him this NFL is all about the money. If you don't have a product that's going to produce multiple streams of revenue, you're not going to make it. And right now, the biggest proof that you can see is this Los Angeles Chargers. Los Angeles Chargers are playing in a 30,000-seat stadium. What do they care if
they
sell out a stadium every game?
Yep.
And I've got people saying, oh, we sell out every game up here. What do they care? You're the lowest-earning stadium in the league.
What other people forget is, with the Chargers, It's been, I mean, they're the only people that are making out for money with the Chargers, these ticket agencies, because they don't have a fan base in L.A. They're getting basically the Chargers are playing 16 road games this year because fan base.
Yeah, there's no
the question I want to ask Oba is, I would think that they would stay away from cities like Oakland, like San Antonio, only because, look, the first minute they go there, there's territorial rights you got to pay.
Yeah,
and
that's right, eminent domain.
Yeah, so if they're already coming in, if they've already got a check and there's already like seven or eight hands on that check, they're gonna try to. I mean, to me, Birmingham.
That's a
shootout. Yeah, well, see, to me, Birmingham makes the most sense because
it does.
There's no team there. Who did they pay territorial rights to? The Crimson Tide?
That's true. I mean, we know they're gangsters in college football, but they ain't that gangster. But Birmingham does sound like the option, but of course, Toronto has yet to open up their mouth.
But who would they have to pay rights to?
Well, if they go to San Antonio, you're going to have to deal with either the Cowboys or Houston, who's ever the closest.
That's true.
If they go to Oakland, they're going to have to pay.
Oh, you mean competition
rights. Territorial rights.
Territorial rights. Yeah, that's like Baltimore, Washington right now.
Well, they would be awarded a territory based on the move. They wouldn't have to pay any money.
If the Buffalo Bills move to Oakland, they would have to pay the Niners territorial rights.
Mm-hmm.
No, they would. No, they wouldn't.
Really?
No. No. Why would they have to pay another NFL team? The move, every NFL team on a move gets a relocation fee. That's all you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever's bringing you in is going to cover that.
Mm-hmm.
So there wouldn't be any territorial
but
rights.
So there's no clash.
No. Where would there be a territory is awarded by the NFL?
Oh, now is that part of the Congress always threatens them with
Well, it's not an eminent domain issue then, based on what Ova is saying. There was a question about that before, with sports leagues and teams that move too close in the general area of another team, or what another team thought was its territory.
Right, but you had Oakland move to L.A.
Mm-hmm. That's true. They did move there.
Yeah,
but you know what?
Giants and the Jets are right there.
Right, that's true.
I mean, the territory is awarded by the NFL to any particular team, but you wouldn't have to pay territorial rights to another team because you share revenue anyway.
Oh, okay.
That's true.
Every team mm-hmm. every team gets 200. These guys are raking it in. That's why let's take the Los Angeles Chargers. You go to Los Angeles Charger game, they're going to play Kansas City. The stadium holds 32,000 people. You're going to have 22,000 Kansas City fans there.
That's right.
Yep.
The owner of the Chiefs splits the gate with with Los Angeles 64
years. Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you are, and then you're splitting. You have an equal split of the television revenue, which is up to $255 million per team.
True.
So no matter what, if a team is awarded to another city, the Board of Governors has to approve it, which is 24 out of 32.
24 out of the 32.
Right.
Okay.
So
then you're gonna the owner would be charged a relocation fee.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be probably paid for by whoever you negotiated where you're moving. And that's split up between the 32 teams.
Okay.
Now, the recent hockey franchise, they kind of model themselves after the NFL. Their 32nd team, I think the fee is $650 million to start a new franchise in Seattle. And that's split between the 32 teams. So there's no territory. The territories is awarded by the NFL, and those are your territorial rights for broadcasting. But each team gets an equal share of broadcasting anyway.
Got you. Okay. Well, then, having said that, you've got a winning Sabres team right now, and they're actually playing very well. The acquisition of Jeff Skinner and Hutton behind goal. And some of the players are starting to improve. But you've got the Bills that are still losing. So in Buffalo, what gets the majority of the sports talk? Are they talking Bills losing, or are they talking how the Sabres are winning?
Both. Both, because the Bills are still the biggest thing going. But this is a hockey town, too.
Yeah.
People are pretty excited about the Sabres, but it just seemed pretty coincidental. You got one owner of both teams, and they're basically telling you you need two new arenas. And they, I spoke to them, and they're not going to pay for, you know, some of these politicians were telling me, oh, the Pagulas can build their own facility. I'm like, are you kidding me? I said, how many NFL owners build their own facility? And most of them could do it.
Yeah,
they don't do it.
Nope.
They're going to give you the NFL formula, $300 million from the owner, $300 million from the NFL. You pay the rest. That's how it works.
That's pretty much it.
And most times they want non-finance money, so they ain't got to pay it back.
Yep.
And then they want full control of the arena.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you look at it as far as the Bills, Sabres, it's almost equal talk right now because the Sabres are winning. But they're running a con game with the Bills talking about, you know, trust the process and take up. You know, that's a con game to keep you employed, basically. And Sean McDermott, I was one of the few people that asked, okay, you cut Kelvin Benjamin, you cut Andre Holmes, right? On the other station, they said, oh, don't worry about it. I say, well, you're not going to get credit for your compensatory picks by the NFL. Because they come
That's
up with a formula every year.
You just threw them away. That's right.
Right. You just released these players three quarters of the season.
Yep.
By you not keeping them until the end of the season when they're free agents and they're going to sign with other teams, you're not going to get credit to get those compensatory picks when starting.
That's
third,
right. They
months.
Had to keep them. They had to keep them because they had to keep them so that their salary would be paid for the remainder of the season. Obviously, they didn't do that. Cheap motherfuckers.
And that former Buffalo Bill special teams guy that thinks he can get in the Hall of Fame, Steve Tasker, he works for the Bills now. He goes on the radio saying, oh, no, you don't get those picks. It's a formula they use, and which is true, but the formula is based on who you lose. He's saying it's who you sign and who you lose, and that's not true. You can look it up. The rules are there, the NFL rules for compensatory picks. They won't tell you what the formula is, but it's based on who you lose in free agency, not who you sign in free agency.
Because
there's been instances that the Bills have signed seven or eight new players, and they still got compensatory picks based on who they lost. So now that you release Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes, who were due to be free agents, you're not going to be given credit for losing them in free agency, which is absolutely stupid.
Where did Benjamin go?
Kansas City.
Oh, okay. Intriguing.
And Holmes is in Denver because I think Emmanuel Sanders with that Achilles injury.
Okay. This is definitely stay tuned stuff. But, gentlemen, now that I have you all's attention, I want to give some shine to Gary because Gary picked up on something that we talked about a couple of shows ago, and it has to do with what's in your motherfucking wallets. And I'm pissed. every time this was bothering me earlier this morning. You know how your brain don't shut off when something's going on in your head and all that and you got an idea? I was up at 8 o'clock this morning because of that freaking commercial. And obviously the commercials and their catchphrase are part of their promotion. But What they're promoting and what they're promoting on is what bothers me. This is like blood money to me. It started, of course, with the Prince commercial, you know, and then let's get crazy. And all of a sudden, you know, flashing of Capital One and all this, and then they get to what's in your wallet. But What bothers me even more is they have used Prince, Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, and the Jacksons in their promotions. So that songs like Don't Stop Till You Get Enough and Can You Feel It and all these things have been part of the subliminal programming that Capital One looks to push here. And we know probably the most egregious death in all of these things was Michael, because of what Michael had done as a businessman. Now, we all know George Jefferson always said that he always had enough green to counter his black. But one thing George didn't figure on was how dick dastardly these SOBs would be in determining how to cut him off as the knees in making progress. Now, Michael Jackson has been called lots of things. You know, he was Wacko Jacko and all this other stuff, Strange Kid, X-Files. You know, they try to say he was a pedophile. But when those commercials play Michael Jackson's songs in those crappy Capital One jobs, this is what they're not telling you.
Anyway, first let me say, I really don't like to talk that much. I really don't. I prefer to perform than talk.
Yeah!
You know, let me just say this. The tradition of great performers from, and I really want you to hear what I have to say. The tradition of great performers from Sammy Davis Jr. to James Brown to Jackie Wilson to Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly. The story is usually the same, though. You know, these guys work really hard at their craft, but the story ends the same. They usually are broken, torn, and usually just sad, and the story is very sad in the end, because the companies take advantage of them. They really do. And Sony, being the artist that I am, at Sony, I've generated several billion dollars for Sony, several billion, and they really thought that my mind is always on music and dancing, and it usually is, but they never thought that this performer and myself would outthink them.
Yeah!
We can't let them get away with what they're trying to do, because now I'm a free agent.
Yeah.
I just owe Sony one more album. It's just a box set, really. It's with two new songs, which I've written ages ago. Because every album that I record, I write, like, literally, I'm telling you the truth, I write at least 120 songs every album I do. So I can do the box set and just give them any two songs. So So I'm leaving Sony a free agent. Owning half of Sony. So I own half of Sony's publishing, and I'm leaving them, and they're very angry at me because of it. But I just did good business, you know.
Tell him! Tell him, Michael! Tell the story!
But, so the way they get revenge is to try and destroy my album. But I've always said, you know, art, good art never dies. Thank you. I love Unbreakable. You know. And Tommy Mottola is a devil.
Respect!
I'm not supposed to say what I'm going to say right now, but I have to let you in on a secret.
Say it.
Please don't videotape what I'm going to say, okay? Turn that off, please. You know what? I don't mind. Tape it.
Michael is getting gangster today! Yeah.
Mariah Carey. After divorcing Tommy, came to me crying. She was crying so bad I had to hold her. And she said to me that this is an evil man. And Michael, this man follows me, she said. He taps her phone. And he's very, very evil. And she doesn't trust him. And he is a horrible human being. And we have to continue our drive until he's terminated.
There you go!
We can't allow him to do this to great artistry. We just can't. I just want you to know I appreciate everything you've done. You've been amazing. You're so loyal, Diana. Everybody, Waldo, all the people here, I love you all. You've been amazing.
Thank you!
I love you. But still, I promise you, the best is yet to come.
Yeah!
Now, what you just heard is the sound of Blood Money. Michael Jackson, everybody called him a weirdo. In many ways, his life had been altered because he did not really have a childhood. He was working long before labor laws for kids had been dissolved. Obviously, he had an artistic bent to what he did, so folks didn't look at it as work. But Michael clearly and calmly tread the path that Sam Cooke had gone, Benny King, Otis Redding, James Brown, and others, those who wanted credit for their work, to have their master's account to them. So that if people wanted them, they would have to pay them or give credit where credit was due. Michael succeeded. Big time, obviously. But when you ask what's in your wallet now, we know is that 51% of Sony is now back in their catalog because of Michael's untimely death. Gentlemen, when you hear that Capital One music and those fucking questions and that stupid what's in your wallet statement, what are you thinking?
Michael, go ahead.
When I first heard this commercial, my stomach crawled. I mean, it literally crawled. I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And then 2 weeks later, I had a friend. I said, oh, no. And what they did was outright evil. I mean, evil was out of mind. Because they think three people who were dealing with legal issues to begin with, right?
Yeah.
So
that's right.
They knew that they get around the stuff legally. That made me more angry than anything else. That's why I had to write the article. I'm sick and tired of the BS and the America does.
Now, I am leading up to that, G, and for those who did not hear Gary quite clearly, Gary is working on a piece right now regarding the Capital One backlash and the fact that we don't want to hear shit from Capital One about what's in our wallets when we know that those commercials are paid for with blood money. Tony.
Well, you know, it's interesting that Michael talked about Mariah, because remember, they've also painted out Mariah as, you know, sort of loopy as well over the years.
Yeah.
And we've seen her career take a swan dive over the years. But the first thing that came to my mind was Richard Petterman. Because basically, Little Richard's been screaming this for years.
And
all these years, we sort of looked at him as our crazy uncle. Oh, he there goes Uncle. There goes Little Richard.
There's Uncle Richard again. Yep.
But beyond the Tutti Frutti and good golly, Miss Molly, he was letting us know that this is something that's been a part of the music history of music for years.
Yep.
Whether you're talking about Ray Charles wanting his masters, whether it's TLC, you know, making Pebbles a shitload of money and not being able to show anything for it. I think even in the BET movie with New Edition, the thing that strikes you is how big they got, but how little money they made. And this has been going on for years and years and years, especially with black artists. And Sam Cooke is another perfect example because, you know, Sam was on the verge of turning things around, so he had to be killed. And basically, what this has shown over the years, and it's interesting because, unfortunately, with Prince, with Whitney, with Michael, and also Mariah in there too, they've been scandalized by the media. And look, some of it has been on their own. A lot of it has been sort of innuendo and what have you. But the one common thread was, you know, they all got, quote unquote, in other people's eyes, they got too big for their britches. And we had to basically take them down a peg or two. Because it's funny, I was watching something on Netflix the other night, a documentary in regards to the murder of Jam Master Jay, DJ with
DMC.
And it's interesting because, see, remember, they, when they were at the height of their game, no one could take credit for them. You know, there was, because remember, because rap was, you know, rap.
They were fighting rap.
Message.
They didn't want it out.
Exactly. And then, you know, now they already had a following, and I guess when they collaborated with the folks books they did, and especially when they did Walk the Plains, even tired books. Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me
right.
Okay? Sorry about that.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, basically, Van Halen. When they basically...
Yes.
You mean
Aerosmith with Walk This Way?
I'm sorry. Yeah, when they did the Walk This Way thing, it brought them to another audience. It basically brought together rap and rock and roll, so to speak.
That's right.
And and again, you could almost see the line from Spike's Malcolm, you know, that's too much power for one maybe to have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's been the common thread. You know, when these artists or group of artists reach a certain level, then the quote-unquote man wants to be like, okay, I'm turning the golden spigot off. Y'all gonna make the money I tell you to make. And
you know what?
Tony,
you're right. When you talked about Aerosmith, I remember that video. And if you remember the video, you saw how they tore the wall down in between because they were trying to like react unfavorably to the noise that was going on. And as soon as they cracked that shit up, everybody broke out. And it was like, yeah. But we did not see that as clearly and saw it the same as what Sam Cooke would have saw if he had been alive to see rap turn out. Remember, rap was supposed to be a fad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
rock and roll to a certain extent.
Exactly. But even now, you'll see them try to make these tired-ass commercials, you know, with kids to try to make it seem like it's hip and it's new and it's fresh and try to make them hip-hop oriented. I mean, we've seen commercials from everything from breakfast cereal to laxatives influenced by hip-hop.
Yep.
Now, that's something that's over 40 years old. So obviously it ain't a fad anymore. And then we know that the music intelligentsia won't treat it as that, but you're right to the bone of the whole thing here. The bottom line is that Michael had beaten them. He had gotten the Beatles catalog. Now, nobody's going to say that Paul McCartney was a dumb fuck for selling Michael his catalog. You know, as Michael said, it was good business. So obviously, whatever reasons McCartney allowed it to be sold, he was desperate for something because he never would have sold it. He understood the significance of it. A black man owning the Beatles catalog? Are you kidding me?
But think about that. Think of the ramifications of
yes.
We all are old enough to remember about how big the Beatles were from pretty much from day one to day last. And whether you think it was Yoko Ono that broke them up or whatever, the fact that I guess we can call him Sir McCartney now.
He's Sir McCartney.
Would basically go to Michael like eBay and sell their.
Exactly.
I think it speaks more of how so many of these folks who you think know better and have more access, or allegedly have more access and more capital to things, literally don't have a clue. And forgive me for indulge me for a minute in regards to the sports analogy. When Dave Winfield wrote his autobiography a few years back, it was very interesting to see that a person like a George Steinbrenner, who's been in big business for years and years and years, and there was basic business things that Winfield put in his contract that Steinbrenner either had no knowledge of or his people didn't have knowledge of. I'm talking about that now.
That's right.
And see, if they're not now, yes, we know that Steinbrenner's biggest thing was the shipping business. Before he bought the Yankees. But when you're dealing in national and international stuff, there's just basic common law stuff that you should know. And the fact that a that most in most people's eyes, a common a commoner or God forbid a black athlete was able to, you know, basically take him to the cleaners. It speaks to just how the difference between folks who allegedly got power. Basically, they may have power, but they don't have the damn common sense to go through things. And I think again, I go full circle in regards to Mike, because remember, if Michael was as dumb and sensitive and all of the things that he was depicted as in the press, how come Tommy Mottola was doing the Eddie Murphy pose? Basically, near the end of Michael's career, and he had to kill him, and he basically had to kill him just to break even.
Exactly. So when you put that back to where we started with these commercials, it's got to ring hollow in everybody's soul who listens to that shit. It ain't about a fucking credit card, and it sure ain't about pushing anybody being treated fairly. Michael's speech regarding Sony and Tommy Mottola and the rest of these SOBs who held him back is, unfortunately, a revisiting of what happened to Otis Redding, which they never really talk a lot about because Otis was killed in that crash. Mm-hmm. You know, Sam Cooke we know about, and he got co-opted because he dared to ask for his own shit. He shouldn't have had to ask for anything that he made, but that's a separate issue altogether. Michael spelled it all out, and you know how white folks don't like being one-upped when it comes to somebody beating them at their own game. Michael did just that, and he wasn't braggadocious about it and whatnot. He just simply said, you know, I'm out of this motherfucker, and I wish now in retrospect he hadn't said anything because he didn't realize his life was being put in jeopardy because he didn't think it was as serious as that, but obviously it was. I'm sorry, go ahead, Tony.
And in that same vein, just to piggyback with Michael, don't think that his dad, who has been called everything but the power of God since he's called, didn't put that idea or those serious ideas in his head. Because remember, people forget. Michael left Motown too. Remember?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's exactly right.
And we always hear these stories about how Barry Gordy was more of a father to him than Joe was. But even Michael realized, oh, you gonna fuck me over too? Okay, I'm out. So
that's right.
Again, it's not like this. You know, needless to say, this wasn't Michael's first rodeo in regard to that. Hell, if anything. If anything, he learned something from the damn circus clowns along the way.
I think you're exactly right. I think Michael could say goodbye, unlike the record that he wrote. So clearly, he and Clifton Davis. But the bottom line in all of this is that hearing these commercials sound like a soundtrack for a murder movie. I don't want to hear Let's Go Crazy anymore. You know, I don't want to hear Whitney sing, oh, I want to die with somebody. You know, or ask motherfuckers, can I feel it? Can I feel it? Yeah, I can feel it. I can feel getting screwed. I can feel being violated. I can feel being disrespected. Don't ask me, can I feel it? We feel that shit every fucking day. So, never mind asking me what the fuck is in my wallet. It ain't none of your damn business anyway. Gentlemen, because affairs of state must take precedence over affairs of state, I have to get out of here. So, we're going to have to go and revisit this another time, but please, a final thought from both of you before we carry on. Big G, you first.
Well, sad note, linebacker Isaiah Robinson, the Buffalo Bills, the Los Angeles Rams, passed away in a limousine crash last night.
Oh, no. I'm sorry to hear that.
Isaiah Robinson was a all-star for the Rams.
Yep.
And one of my favorite players because I was a Rams fan back then.
Mm-hmm.
This is really the
sorry to hear.
No good. No music box, no name, bro. Go over to January 15th.
Ah, so the music box is shut down for the rest of the year. Well, thank you for the contributions to the music box and all the good stuff therein. We will continue with the Music Therapy Mindstream. Editorially, Gary, we'll see you in 2019 on your own venue. We hope that you will finish out the rest of the year with us, you and Tony as well. T-Mac, shameless plug, final thought, please.
Well, www.basnmovement.com. And I'm anxious to see what's going to happen at these winter meetings, because the baseball winter meetings would start tomorrow, because we've already seen a couple of big salvos. Paul Goldschmidt going to the Cardinals. Corbin signing
wow.
the Nationals. And I think it's just the scratching of the surface, because of course Machado and Harper are still
big
out
prizes.
There. And usually there's always some other quote-unquote secondary prize that winds up being a bigger prize along the way, that winds up being a bigger story in the regards to these baseball meetings. So, yeah, so this will be interesting to see how this plays out the next few weeks.
All right. All right, everybody. And, of course, Gary is going to present a piece regarding this same Capital One madness that we discussed over the next day or so. So look out for that. Check out the stuff at basnnewsroom.com. That's www.basnnewsroom, all one phrase, .com. And the rest of the chefs finishing the year out. We're going to finish the year out with our end-of-year dance party on New Year's Eve. And the day before then, it will be Barry White and Isaac Hayes, the Love Men, one-on-one for the Bedroom Championship of the World. So some good shit coming your way. Everybody out there, please go safe and be mindful of the weather as well. No drinking and driving. I want you to get from A to B and back to A-OK. We'll see you Sunday with the Music Therapy Mindstream. We are out.
You know, we're dealing with a very critical and crucial time. Most crucial and critical time that I've ever witnessed. Being as young as I am, you know. We all don't want to say nothing else, so we say as young as we are. Now I want to talk about the pronunciation and the realization. Now the educators, they call it ESP, positive thinking, right? Some of the people on the cross other side of the pond call it vibe, vibration, astrology, and all those different things, you understand? But I call what it is and what it is. What it is and what it is. Look at him. Now you see, a brother, you take in the ghetto, you find a whole lot of crime. I can understand, hey, I know what it means. Being 9 years old before I got my first pair underwear out of a store. You know, putting on a half press suit from the pawn shop with tennis shoes. Trying to be hip, so I know where it's coming from. Like the fella say, having catfish head stew. And look like the catfish went in there with his head and come out very quick and didn't leave nothing else. That's one thing the educators and the politicians and the establishment got to remember. Now, brothers need jobs. If you don't work, you can't eat. If you don't work, you can't eat. Get hip to yourself, good start, my brother, and get it from the street. If you don't work,
You can't eat this, you don't wait, Lord. You can't eat, yeah. So you got to have mind power to deal with starvation. And that's what we're dealing with. You see, we can't go back to the biblical stories. Two loaves of bread. Or two little fishes, five loaves of bread. Two little fishes, yeah. Five loaves of bread. Now look here, too many brothers to go by that. Now I want your brothers to dig where we're coming from. Set your mind right here. Dig the JBE experience. I dug this from a young man out of New York. He said the GBE. The GBE. Now we want to take it to the JBE. The JBE experience. And Fred, brother, brother, lay it on me, lay it. Mind power. Power. The JB.
Now back to the... And meanwhile, back to the ranch. Let's talk about the things what, that we deal with each and every day. Now, horns. Now, horns. Let's tell everybody what it is and what it is. 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 You can't change it. Don't try to change it. Deal with it. Don't fool yourself. Look in the mirror. You find you can't fool yourself. You gotta deal with it. What it is. What it is. Tell me. Deal with it. But wait a minute. Now look here. I believe we should go back to the top. I want to go back to the beginning. Because I let your old Morgan play them funky sticks over there. Now we'll build it up a little bit. Now we'll tell them what it is and what it is. 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 Give me some horns. What it is and what it is. What it is and what it is. Give me a taste. Hit me. I want to go way back there. To the top. Way back there. Right now.